ladies and gentlemen, this edition of the Hagmann Hagmann Report. For those wondering what I was yelling at before, I was yelling at people who are very critical about I was not yelling at our audience, but you know, there are people out there who are very critical about, for example, the way we do things, or they're attempting to they'll contact our sponsors, for example, or they will do things to shut us up, to take us down, take us off the air. And they think that they live for that. They believe that that is their Christian mandate, that you know, that we are actually not helping we're practicing, for example, conservatism or Christianity improperly. Or we're just simply for profit or whatever. When in fact, you know, Russ Dizdar, for example, he's got a whole team who assists law enforcement, who goes out into the dregs of humanity and rescues children, captive children. And I'm not going to speak on his behalf, because I don't know. I'm not going to do that, considering the fact that he's got active investigations, but we are also doing that as well. Okay. So to our critics and to those people who want to take us off the air and say, well, you know what, whatever the case might be, my question is, okay, is that your task as a Christian or as a conservative to do that? Is that what you've done? So that's why I was angry, because the majority of people out there who are in the position, Some call them accusers of the brethren. Some call them just whiners and complainers. Those people out there, my question to you is, what have you done to assist in the, assist in cases like this, or to expose the evil, or to rescue children, or, you know, insert the task here? And generally speaking, 99% have done nothing. And their whole mission in life is to tear down others. That's why I was angry. So, and for that, I apologize, and I apologize for yelling in anyone's ear. But see, sometimes, look, I'm human, okay? I've got faults. Many, just ask my wife, just ask Joe, just ask Eric the tech. But this, when I see pictures like this, and I see pictures that I cannot show you at all, I can't show on InfoWars, I can't show on this platform, of some of those horrendous things, and then it's incredible, and by definition of that word, incredible. But I'll tell you what puts a smile on my face as well as others, Sherry's Berries. You know, Mother's Day again this weekend. Moms are great, aren't they? You love your mom. Your wife, for example, the mother of your children, that special person. It's Mother's Day is this weekend. How important is your mom or the mother of your children to you? Show her how important she is. Again, Mother's Day is this weekend, but there's still time to send her Sherry's Berries. Huge, freshly dipped strawberries starting at just $19.99 plus shipping. Right? And you can double the berries for just $10 more. You get to pick the delivery date, and these berries are guaranteed to arrive fresh and delicious, or your money back. These are not your typical gourmet dipped strawberries, and will impress and surprise any mom. Sherry's Berries are huge, sweet, juicy, and covered in decadent toppings, chocolate chips, chopped nuts, white milk, dark chocolatey goodness. When we get ours, oh, they're just so good, man. My mouth is watering. But here's the deal. The only way to get this amazing berries deal starting at $19.99 plus shipping is to visit berries.com. That's B-E-R-R-I-E-S, berries.com. You click on the microphone at the top right-hand corner and use our code word Hagmann. Just that simple. That's berries, B-E-R-R-I-E-S, berries.com, and code Hagmann when you click on the mic. This amazing deal won't last long. And again, Mother's Day is this weekend, so be sure to order now. Tell mom how much you love her. Show her how much you love her. Sherry's Berries. Berries.com. Code word Hagmann. Joe, I'm going to kick it over to you.
Coming up now is dark journalist Daniel List. His website is darkjournalist.com. And Dark Journalist is an independent investigative reporter and filmmaker who coined the term dark journalism to introduce critical areas of research and investigation that the mainstream media refuses to touch. And he is a returning guest on this show. Daniel, welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, it's great to see you guys.
Yeah, you always look dapper as usual, man.
I appreciate it. Well, now I have to keep it up, I guess.
So, all right. Where do we start, man? I mean, seriously, where do we start? What do you?
Well, you're already all over the Comey thing, and I knew you guys would have a great report ready for that because it is earth-shattering in a lot of ways. But you know, it's interesting because although I came on tonight to speak about the secret space program, I can tie in the Comey firing to the secret space program.
Oh, okay.
Folks, good.
Put your seatbacks in. Buckle up, put your seatbacks and tray tables in their full upright and locked position because we're about to hit some turbulence. I got to hear this. All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So here's where we'll start. Comey, who was fired, he was very controversial, and we knew at the end of the 2016 election, he was playing both sides, basically, couldn't quite figure out who was going to get in and kept popping up in this election, swaying it one way or another. But a couple of things about his background would really inform us about why he's fired. Because when you fire an FBI director, it doesn't happen very often. The president is completely, of course, within his rights to fire any official in his administration. But, you know, Comey was going to be done in 2018 anyway. So, you know, there was a reason to get him out, and it's kind of interesting. There's a couple of things there. One is that Comey actually was involved in the prosecution of the Gambino family, and this is a very interesting kind of deep state take on this, but there were a lot of forces, you know, around the country. Half of the deep state was supporting, or I would say even more than half, supporting the Clinton campaign. But there were elements of the deep state that broke off and were supporting Trump, and one of them had to do with his older casino ties, and some of those ties came from the mafia. And part of the mafia's beef, basically, was that with things like Obamacare and so on, people had to take more of their money and give it to the government. They didn't have it to spend on casinos and other stuff. But so there was a whole battle going on underneath the scenes there. So you can see right off the bat that Comey wasn't looking too good having this history of being involved with prosecuting elements of the mafia and leaving other elements alone. But his real, I think the real trick to him being fired has to do with the fact that before he was FBI director, he was the senior VP of Lockheed Martin. And Lockheed Martin, being the major military contractor along with Boeing, you know, they have this pressure net around power in Washington. And one of the things we have with Trump is he doesn't like to be pressured. I think we've seen that as the kind of CEO alpha male president that he is. This idea of being manipulated by contractors, you know, the minute he got into the White House, he started complaining that these contractors were billing him too much for Air Force One. This is code language, really. You know, on the surface, it's just a guy complaining. But really, what he's saying is there's a new sheriff in town. And so Comey, being in with this military contractor, military intelligence type of crowd, as the FBI director, isn't going to cut it if you want to be free from the deep state. So you've got to appoint your own guy. Now, let's watch very closely who he gets in there, because I guarantee you that person is not going to be such a slave of the deep state. And he's going to have some kind of relationship where he can feel like he can get control of this apparatus that's out of control again.
You know, one of the things that you pointed out was the Comey's history with prosecuting certain cases. What are your thoughts? A lot of people say that he was basically a defense attorney for Obama's and Clinton. What do you think? Do you think that there was outside pressures, as you talked about, like from the deep state, or people in the with influence in the political world, as to not charge Hillary Clinton? Or was this something that you think he did as a favor? Because obviously, he came right out and said that she committed a crime, but because, and his excuse was there was no intent behind that crime, therefore he was not going to charge her. What do you think the reasons are for that decision?
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. I agree with that. You know, those hearings between Trey Gowdy and Comey from the fall are just fascinating. Because Trey Gowdy can't believe, with all the things that Comey is saying, that he's not recommending prosecution for Clinton, who, you know, took classified materials into her home server and put them in a barn, you know, in Chappaqua. That's definitely unusual behavior. And the media and, you know, the power that was going on to try to get her into the White House must have been an immense pressure, you know. And for somebody like Comey, you know, they were cutting deals left and right. We all remember the tarmac meeting that was going on with Loretta Lynch, where Bill Clinton shows up, it's 110 degrees out, and he just strolls over to her plane. I mean, it's very unusual behavior. And it's the kind of behavior, actually, that's indictable. So they were taking such big chances there. But I do think that when we look at Comey, we have to look way beyond the facade of, here's an FBI director, you know, and he's caught in the middle. It's a lot deeper than that. I think one of the things about Comey that was interesting was you could feel when he let Clinton off the hook that he knew he had done something that was, you know, absolutely. He probably, yeah, what they were telling him probably was, she's getting in the White House, she's your next president, you know, you better let her off. And a number of his investigators, you know, Judge Napolitano's done some very good research on this. A number of the FBI investigators working directly under Comey all recommended that he recommend an indictment. So the fact that he didn't is extraordinary, I think. But we have to say the pressures on him might come from traditional political space, but the military contractors now have so much power that if he was senior VP, that's how he got in. So if they were backing Clinton and then he recommended that she be indicted and throw the election to Trump, you know, what kind of a position is he going to have with them? I think that's probably what was on his mind. He's a fascinating figure, I think, in all this, in that he felt constantly like he had to come out and give these press conferences. And FBI directors don't do that. You're going to have to look really hard in history for an FBI director to comment on any case. They really don't like to. So I think Comey's a total deep state figure, and there was loud applause from people who were, you know, interested in America and freedom when Comey was ousted. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz was one of the first people who said, you know, this is just, Comey's just one of many people who have to go.
Absolutely. Now, back to the Hillary Clinton emails, and this was something that was in the news, Comey testifying last week about the emails again, and Huma Abedin came up, and Anthony Weiner. What the same rationale behind, you know, what he said about Huma knowingly forwarding email message to her husband, who doesn't have the proper security clearances to read this information, and having him print it out. Comey came out and said during this testimony that, well, Anthony Weiner didn't read these emails. Like, he was there every time one was printed out. Do you believe it's the same thing, that he was pressured not to, you know, move forward with charges against anybody else around Hillary Clinton for the same reasons, as you stated earlier, that she was going to be the next president, you know, very likely? And
I have a follow-up question to that. So,
okay.
Well, I wouldn't trust Weiner with a Google account, never mind classified information. I mean, he's definitely, he's an unusual figure in as much as he was actually a very good candidate for mayor for New York for a very long time before his obvious, you know, he has a kind of a need not only to do these things, this kind of deviant behavior of sending around images to underage girls, but he also has the penchant for getting caught. And very often it's by his own hand. You know, he clicks public on his Twitter and it goes, you know, it's a weird psychosomatic thing. But you do have to worry when you have this kind of a character around Huma Abedin, who was the closest thing to who was going to be the future president, Hillary Clinton, you know, the Democratic nominee. I mean, these are not the kinds of people that you want running the country, for sure. I think that the Weiner laptop, though, probably, in all probability, was the thing that spun the case eventually to Trump and spun the election to Trump, because whatever was on that laptop that they didn't prosecute Weiner for probably said to half of the deep state, you have to stand down and you can't fix the voting machines like you normally do. And you're not going to be allowed to fix Michigan. You're going to let the vote go through. Or we're going to use what we found. Because remember, Giuliani was deep in that whole NYPD. You know, he knows the New York scene. If they had the laptop, he knew what was on it. So, you know, Giuliani was so tight with Trump during the campaign that you have to say that this was something that was just, you know, fell into their laps practically. And I think there was kind of a stand down order on either side of the deep state saying, look, we won't use what we found on that laptop, but you can't rig the machines. You got to let the vote go through. And that's why the convincing vote for Trump came through and he won the Electoral College.
Okay. You answered my question there. you did. So, okay. Now, a couple of things. The last time an FBI director was fired by a president was Sessions back in, what, 94, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So, it's what's happening now is not unprecedented.
No.
My question has to do with the manner in which Comey was terminated. And I think that has, I mean, can you speak on that a little bit? Because this to me was the equivalent of a horse's head in someone's bed, referencing, of course, the movie The Godfather. You know, your thoughts on that?
There's no question. You're absolutely right. It's very unusual the way it all went down, and also that the Russian ambassador was visiting. But I think that this is important because they try to scapegoat Russia, that is the deep state, the media, and, you know, we say the Democrats, but it's just people working through the machinery of the Democratic Party. It doesn't have much to do with a person that you'd meet who's a Democrat. So I like to separate that out a little bit. What it is really, and I think what was happening, is that they were scapegoating Russia, and they were bringing it up as a kind of Red Scare, you know. And I would talk to older people and ask them, do you remember the McCarthy years, you know? And they were shocked because they were like, we haven't seen this Russia scapegoating like this since the 50s. So it was a very unusual tactic. And what was most unusual about it is the Democrats are very often, you know, in that period accused of being commies, you know, and there was all that Red Scare around the Democrats. For them to come back and use those tactics in the 21st century on their enemies is, you know, not only is it archaic, but it was bizarre. And they had everybody in on it. You know, even Saturday Night Live and Stephen Colbert were running this Russia thing. Well, that's all part of the same apparatus that operates, you know, and they turn this thing on. And I think what was happening was the deep state, and I had a conversation with Professor Scott, who coined the term the deep state recently, and asked him about this. And one of the things that he was saying was that, you know, we have nuclear weapons that are coming up for renewal. Obama okayed a trillion. The new president's supposed to okay another trillion for renewing them. But if you don't have a nuclear enemy, there's not a good case for it when we're already $20 trillion in debt. But those military contractors want the bids, so they want to be able to do this. So, in essence, the nature of the problem was that they needed Russia as an enemy. They needed Cold War 2.0, and that's what Hillary was promising them. But Trump, when he got in, as we know, he said, I'll probably get along with Putin. I have no problems with Russia. You know, he didn't want to get involved in Syria. But he had a lot of problems in the first 2 months. They were hanging him up left and right. And then out of the blue, it seemed he changed course, and he did that quick bombing of the runway without really harming any of the infrastructure of Syria. And that whole little wave came up, and he got a little wave attention, and suddenly the Russia narrative retreated, and the press was like, okay, you know, you had guys who were like Bilderberg reporters like Fareed Zakaria, and he was coming out and saying, good job, Mr. President. this was extraordinary. Brian Williams talked about the beautiful weapons that we were using. You know, it was unusual. So their Russian narrative, they thought, okay, we're back in business. But then here Trump, again, signaling to the deep state, I'm not going to play your game, fires the FBI director, which I think is a pretty large-scale move in any case, but not unheard of, but certainly large-scale. but also has the Russian ambassador in, meaning I'm not sort of going along with this Russian narrative, Cold War 2.0 thing. It's not going to work. I'm going back to what I came in here to do. This is the message I think he's sending. And now everybody wants his head on a platter again, just like 2 months ago. Here we are. So I think this is the nature of the thing. The deep state wants the Russia tension. They want the money for the military contractors. The Democrats want to go along with that. And elements like John McCain and Lindsey Graham in the Republican Senate. I've never seen a more ridiculous senator in the Republican Party than John McCain.
Yeah,
you know, this is absurd.
Hold on just 1 second, sir. Can we forego the network break? I don't want to miss a minute of the dark journalist. I love his analyses. I love this, and I think every minute counts. So if that's all right with you, we're going to just power right through until the top of the hour. All right. Wow. So
okay. I want to say I really enjoy the reporting that you guys do. It's excellent, and I tune in often.
Well, thank you. And folks, go visit his website.
Darkjournalist.com.
Thank you. I knew that, but thanks for the assist, brother.
Daniel, you were just speaking on the
son.
The hypocrisy that we see sometimes. And we don't have to get too far into this. I know it's you know, crazy, and anybody with any common sense can see right through it. Just to give you a few examples, we had Maxine Waters today give an interview where she stated that if Hillary Clinton were president, that Hillary should fire Comey right away. But Donald Trump is breaking the law, basically, by firing this. But the timing seems to be an issue that some of these people have with the firing for whatever reason. And then, you know, we see, you know, Maxine Waters, you mentioned John McCain, the other shoe's gonna drop soon, there's other shoes that are gonna drop soon. And when we see this, and we see this with the media too. Now, yesterday, my dad thought that, and he's right, the news and these politicians came out and took the opportunity to score their political points and call for, you know, say Trump abused his power and he's overstepping his authority. How much of this is political jargoning or you know, to be the talking head on the news that is insulting Trump versus, you know, the hypocrisy there? Because you had all these Democrats saying they wanted Comey. He was incompetent. He was, you know, a disgrace to the FBI. He's going on a witch hunt against Hillary. All these Democrats who are out there saying how terrible Comey is are now, you know, bashing Trump's decision to fire Comey and stepping up to defend him. How much of that is just, do you believe it's just political jargoning versus how they really feel? And then I have a secondary question.
If I can interject one thing, what Joe just said reminds me of that joke where a young boy has a very sick cat, and the parents go to him and say, "Johnny, I'm sorry, but we had to put your cat down." And he's crying, inconsolable. And little Johnny looks up and says, "But I wanted to put him down." You know, that to me, that twisted mentality, yeah. Okay, that's an example of the twisted mentality. Hopefully I didn't offend anyone out there.
Yeah, can you just comment on the hypocrisy from the left, and again, how much of this is how they actually feel with their continuing flip-flops versus how much of this do you believe is they're doing this to please their base and score political points?
Oh, by the way, Doug, cat lovers everywhere definitely will forgive you for that, because it's just an analogy. You're telling a story.
Well, I don't know. Some snowflakes might be looking for their toys and safe space.
I do think that there's something to be said about, you know, ordinarily when we look, let's even go back to 2012. You'd have like the Mitt Romney people and the Barack Obama people, and you'd get people coming out and saying, "Well, you know, I don't like Republicans because some Medicare issue," and a Republican would come forward and say, you know, "They're not strong enough on defense." I mean, these were traditional back and forth issues. You see a lot of that go on a regular basis, and you expect it because as politicians, they're each trying to get the football. So that's not so much of a surprise. However, when they get into narratives that don't suit what their ideology is supposed to be, this is when we really have to take a look, and accountability has to come into play. take someone like McCain, for example. I mean, he's a Republican, and his basic beef with President Trump and the reason that he's constantly going back to Trump as a colluder or all this kind of thing is that with Russia is that Trump's not enough of a war hawk for him. He liked Obama's war hawk tendencies, you know, bombing Libya and stuff, than he does his own Republican president, who is an America First guy. Now, the America First faction, I think, that we have in America, you know, comes out of that association of manufacturers. The real kind of people have a feel for it. And you have a whole other strip of political power that are the globalist, corporate globalist faction. They don't care about America. They see it as another zone. As a matter of fact, they see it as a consumer zone. So they're not even worried about the manufacturing aspect of it. So I think when we look at this and we look at the political forces, somebody like Maxine Waters now finds herself in agreement with John McCain. This stuff gets pretty weird. It starts to show the veneer of the parties isn't what it is. It's actually globalist versus what you would call somebody who believes in humanity. So it's inhuman versus human, because we know the globalists don't believe in fair labor practices. They've got suicide nets around Chinese factories and things like that. So they certainly couldn't be called on the side of humanity. And then people who want to, you know, believe in the national sovereignty of America as a leader in the world, you know, there's no doubt that those people are the ones that they really haven't had a voice. And I think really the last person they had who spoke for them would have been, you'd have to go back to around JFK's period, because he was very concerned with America's image in the world, and he didn't want us to go around bombing countries and getting a bad reputation on the world stage. He was very concerned about that. So, you know, the America First thing, instead of being a selfish thing, is actually, it's smart in a number of ways, because it's saying, look, Americans have a constitution, they're loyal to the constitution, the citizens work for the benefit of their country, and they work for good associations with other countries. Globalism and the global corporatism of that people like Jeff Bezos and the Davos crowd and the Bilderberg crowd, they're very concerned with owning the world as different zones that they can operate their businesses through. But that doesn't, you know, there's no laws that bind corporations the way that they bind governments that are accountable to people. You know, for example, you might be familiar with the program in the FBI called InfraGuard. And InfraGuard is a program where, you know, they set up corporations and regular citizens to basically dime on each other, you know, so like dime on your fellow citizen and get points. And, but they've made it, it's a program through the FBI. So what should happen in a case with InfraGuard is you should be able to go to the FBI and say, well, give us this Freedom of Information Act request on this and this and this case. But because they've made it public-private, InfraGuard now comes in and they say, well, we're actually holding that because it's a corporation that owns this part of InfraGuard because it's public-private. So anything that's important, we keep with them, and you can't get those records because they're a private corporation. So this is the way corporations operate. There's no accountability in that. And the thing about the government, at least we have a shot at making them accountable, because under the Constitution, they're still accountable.
You know, I declined an invitation to join InfraGuard back 2007-2008.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was a good move.
You can give
actually
me a cookie.
They do make it attractive. I've seen the way that they approach it. It's, they make it about defense of the country and all this, but actually,
right,
it is citizen surveillance, and that's, you know, by the Constitution, that ain't going to cut it.
Yeah, very uncomfortable when you start peeling back the layers of that. I, in a perfect world, perhaps the intent might save the day, but in reality, it's not what it. It's just wow. Okay,
Daniel. While we're talking about Comey and the FBI, I want to make sure I ask you this: any thoughts on a replacement for Comey? You said that you believe and you would hope that Trump would put somebody in there who's not affiliated with the deep state, somebody who's independent from the political sphere. and, you know, really doesn't lean left or right one way or the other. Maybe a political atheist is a good word for that. Who would you like to see in there?
That's a good question. I think a guy like Trey Gowdy actually would be quite good, because he's shown himself to be really interested in the execution of the law, and he's got a great background, a legal background. One of the things I think that we do have to watch the background, Trump seems to have a better kind of compass for appointing in legal positions. I think his Supreme Court justice choices that, and he seems to know that part pretty well. I've been a little concerned about some of the kind of Homeland Security style appointments. There's too many generals popping up everywhere, and you have to kind of balance that out. So definitely, I think what would be ideal for an FBI director is that if they got someone who didn't have such a military sense of mind. It's about domestic investigation. They need a real sharp legal expert. And even Comey, I think, being senior VP of Lockheed Martin was a conflict of interest. And they should have looked at that before he even got in. And it's odd because Obama put him in as the one of the only Republicans in his cabinet. So he certainly must have had that deep state pull, as we know, because there's a Democrat appointing a Republican for a really important job. But if we look back to the FBI, I mean, you know, the FBI is J. Edgar Hoover. It's his mandate moving out, and he was there till 73. And it's very hard to get these guys out. The FBI director, like the CIA director, packs their own power, and it's not as easy sometimes to remove them. There's a lot of considerations. So I don't think Trump did this lightly. I think his reasoning had to be, you know, I think he had it in mind that if Comey didn't start to change from the types of positions, being so public about everything, that he was going to have him step down. But you take a guy like J. Edgar Hoover, I mean, his thing was to monitor all the politicians on Capitol Hill and then blackmail them with all their activities to get them to do what he wanted them to do. And that's what the FBI is kind of famous for in many ways. There's great FBI agents and great FBI cases. I'm just saying, when you get into certain levels of power, it starts to become, you know, we remember that J. Edgar Hoover was blackmailing Kennedy about his affairs. I mean, that takes a lot of guts. He's your boss. His brother is your boss, the Attorney General, Robert Kennedy. So, you know, there's a memoir that Robert Kennedy was doing before he died, and he said that he always regarded J. Edgar Hoover as dangerous as a rattlesnake, which I think gives you an idea of how they felt about it. And they were really, you know, deep in their own kind of insider power. But coming in, if they're regarding somebody like Hoover as that dangerous, you have to wonder just, you know, the kind of tactics that are used when we get up to that level. I think there is something that has to be looked at in terms of the military contractors, the intelligence agencies, and agencies like the FBI. You know, the FBI, in my opinion, has done a lot to cover up in very crucial cases, because the power that's exerted comes from the deep state, which is a combination of factors having to do with intelligence agencies, having to do with Wall Street power, and having to do with this kind of secret combination of power, which we don't get to see on the public basis. So there are some things, you know, somebody would say, well, how can you say that about the FBI? It's because the FBI is both public on one hand, this one aspect of them, but there's a parallel force running against these institutions. We know that the CIA practically operated as two entirely different units. They had a regular unit that did spying, and they had this other unit that did domestic activities, and they did covert activities, and they were completely unaccountable. Nobody even knew what they were up to. So, you know, this is the kind of power, I think, that we have to claim back, and if appointing a new FBI director might really be part of that.
All right. Yeah, you know, I've seen a few names thrown out there, from Rudy Giuliani to Chris Christie and others. But you start dipping in back into the political, you know, base of people you're looking at. What you talked about earlier is the you need somebody independent, because the confirmation alone is going to be you know, so hard, and you already have senators and whatnot coming out and saying they're not going to confirm anybody unless, you know, they're this or they're that. Brian, you have any other questions on Comey? Because I think we can.
No, I agree with the very measured and detailed analysis that you provide. Our guest is the Dark Journalist, darkjournalist.com. Thank you. One more question, because I said this yesterday and I got my inbox exploded today. I said this yesterday and I want to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, this firing yesterday, May 9th, 2017, of Comey by President Trump, scale of 1 to 10, the ramifications, political, that it will have, what would you say? 10, 9, 1, middle of the road?
Oh, it's way up there. Okay. It's way up there. But it's at least a 9.
All right.
But the thing is, it's a calculated 9. It was a factor where he reasoned it out. It was not a knee-jerk firing. There's no question about it, because one of the things that Comey was involved in was this Russian collusion investigation, and they found over and over again there were no links to Russia when it came to the Trump campaign. They had very flimsy links to Flynn, and it was kind of a crucial incumbent thing inside the deep state, because if they really wanted to launch wars and create Russia hysteria and do the Cold War II thing, you can't do that with Flynn in there. Flynn was a very steel-eyed intelligence operative, and, you know, he was a defense intelligence operative, so he understood not only espionage, but he understood military operations and, you know, where there's going to be real problems. When they took him out, Trump was weakened, I think, briefly, and, you know, they had problems with Bannon, and inside there was turbulence in the White House, and I don't think he was able to accomplish things as easily. But I think that the whole, you know, basically all they took Flynn out for was for talking to an ambassador, a Russian ambassador, saying, yeah, we are going to have a different policy come January 20th. Well, that's no real surprise. And, you know, you would expect it. And they say, oh, well, you know, he was meeting up with governments. I mean, you know, we've had way more reckless behavior on the other side with that. I mean, the Clintons, it's just off the charts how much compromise there was with other countries and doing things for favors. So I think when they were taking Trump's people and picking them off one at a time, including Kellyanne Conway, who was just doing an outstanding job as a PR person, this is the way they work. They target what they think are like your best points and take them out of the way and see what you have left, you know. So now they're realizing, well, Trump was playing a game with us. He isn't going to bomb Syria and go after Russia. He's shaking hands with the Russian ambassador because he wants friendly relations, which makes sense. You know, this isn't 1959, and it's not Eisenhower going into Kennedy dealing with Khrushchev or something. I mean, it's an interesting thing. David Stockman makes this point that the entire industry in Russia, their entire industrial economy, is what we have in New York City. So, you know, they spend on their defense budget, we spend on our defense budget in 3 weeks what they spend in a year. How much of a threat is Russia? They're not a threat. And, you know, at this point, I think we have threats on the world stage, but it's not Russia. You know, Russia, predominantly, I think the biggest problem that we're having is, one, they're banning GMOs. So, again, it's that corporate state, the corporate global faction that really doesn't like that, because then you lose all those people. You lose all that GMO power. And then now they're talking about going to their own SWIFT transaction clearing system. So what are you going to do with that? You know, they're a major power. If they're out of your digital currency, you're never going to be able to make that. So I think that a lot of these problems that they're having, they're saying Trump is not going to play along with us. We have to find a way to get him out. And I think they're back to that narrative. And they have the overplayed, he's a Putin puppet, which is absurd, you know, for the reasons I just outlined. I mean, it's not a winning strategy. So I think, like just before he got in, the deep state's getting desperate on Trump. They leaked stories about him being in Russia and having wild parties and stuff. That came to nothing. So when they come out like this as the CIA on TV and you see, like, ex-CIA director says Trump may be compromised, then you know they're in trouble, because those players, intelligence players, like to play completely under the radar. And you do not want to see them out there in front of TV cameras accusing people. That's not their role. When they get to that, they're under immense pressure. And the pressure in this case is to somehow trump up charges to get Trump impeached.
Yeah, and if we can get into this just a little bit, there's two things. There's a Russian investigation, and then there's the leaks that I want to hit on before the interview's over. And you just stated, you know, Comey came out, said there was no ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. We've seen many other talking heads and pundits come out, people in the know, and say the same thing. There's no smoking gun. You know, they've been at this for a long time, and if they had something, I do believe they would have released it. Do you see this narrative being able to continue in the news, and how long will this last in the spheres of influence in Washington, this Russia narrative?
Well, I think it's already outlived its usefulness, but I think because the media is so in the pocket of the deep state, this particular faction of the deep state, the militaristic faction, I mean, all we have to do is look at the one Syria strike and how they were in love with Trump for doing that one strike to see how it's so tied together. There were liberal networks that were praising him left and right for about a week. I mean, you don't see that too often. So what does that tell us, really? It tells us that the media is completely under the power of the deep state. And what they want, really, is they want Trump to either be their puppet or they want him to be out of there. And I don't think at this point the Russia story is going to stick, but I think they're going to keep it up because they have nothing to lose. Because even if they're losing revenues on that, if people turn away from the stories, I always tell the story about, you might watch Meet the Press sometimes, and every once in a while this Boeing commercial comes up, and it's about a tank that they have, a new tank. And I just stop and I always say, why are they showing tanks from Boeing on consumer television? You know, I'm not going to go out and buy a M16 or a tank, you know. So that's a payoff there. They're paying Meet the Press to keep up some kind of a story. And this is the type of power, you know, this is what we have to do. We were warned in 1961 by Eisenhower about the military-industrial complex. Those are military contractors. And his warning, you know, 50, 60 years later, now we're looking at it. It's come to fruition. They have too much power. And they exercise the power through the media very often.
Well, let me ask you this then, Daniel. All the hype that we've seen in the news recently about North Korea and, you know, between Kim Jong-un and Trump and, you know, this nuclear testing and this just, it seems that the media hypes this stuff up and gets the ball rolling on this. How much of that, you know, and this has been going on for years and years and forever. How much of that do you believe is to bolster things like defense spending or gain favor, you know, in order if something does happen to be justified in their strikes, versus how much of this is real versus done for purposes outside of what we're seeing?
Well, that's a great question. North Korea is such a classic case. Let's think about a guy like McCain, okay? McCain is always talking about Iran can never get a nuclear weapon, all right? And I agree. I don't think it'd be a good idea for Iran to have a nuclear weapon, but he's so completely, like, you know, his eyes are bulging out of his head and we must stop it, you know? And it's like we have to be bombing Iran to make sure they don't get it. You know, he did bomb Iran during his campaign speech in 2008. But then they have North Korea, who they let get the bomb. They're not even very sophisticated about it. You know, their bombs go off in sideways directions and explode all over the place. McCain never talks about North Korea. He never says anything about it. So obviously, their financial interests aren't tied up over there. They're tied up over here in the Middle East. And everything has to do with having an excuse to go into the Middle East. But as we've seen over and over again, that strategy hasn't been very good for America. Now, the North Korean situation, you know, Kim Jong-un, he was raised in Switzerland, okay? So this is not some madman who was raised inside of this tight, you know, fascist place in North Korea. I'm sure North Korea is run like a fascist state, by the way. But he was raised in Switzerland, hung out in Europe. I mean, he's not, you know, he understands, I think, a lot of the world. I think the setup of North Korea and is basically this. We threaten stuff. We have nuclear energy. We have nuclear bombs and missiles that don't work. We go out on the world stage and saber rattle, and then we get stuff. I think that's basically their MO, and it's been going on. I found an article from 1994 where Clinton had to threaten them with complete nuclear annihilation. That's 23 years ago, saying don't threaten South Korea with nuclear action because he knew they had the bomb. So that's how long we've been dealing with this little football game back and forth. I do think it's dangerous because we're talking about atomic weapons, but I do think also that North Korea knows how to play this game. And let's face it, if there's any kind of nuclear exchange down there, it would be disastrous for China. When you get right down to it, are they going to let it happen? I don't think so. They have a tremendous GDP. It beats ours. It's 7, right? And we have 0.7. So I don't think they want to lose all that because Kim Jong-un has a hot temper.
Yeah, you're right. And I believe that, you know, there's a lot more behind the scenes going on between North Korea and China than that gets reported or that we'll really ever know. For the sake of time, moving on, the leaks. I want to talk to you about the leaks. I don't know if you've seen or heard. There's some speculation that Trump potentially laid some kind of trap to try to catch a White House leaker with some Comey stories and holding back that he was going to fire Comey from certain people inside the White House. I think Rince Priebus was one of them. And I think we're going to see another leaker being exposed. But we have leaks in the White House. We have leaks in the FBI, in the DOJ. This is something that under the Obama administration, they would have never allowed this, nor should any administration allow this. How can they get a hand? I mean, obviously they have to catch the leakers. I guess my question is, do they need to make an example out of the leakers that they do catch to deter other people who might come after these guys from leaking information? And how damaging is this to Trump's agenda, the leaks?
Well, they have a kind of reverse, almost mind control thing going on around this leak situation because you get people like Snowden and you get people like Assange. And, you know, Assange's leaks, I think we can successfully say, helped Trump get into the White House. There's no question about it. He leaked an email batch every week through the campaign that was about John Podesta. And we got a lot out of that. Including Pizzagate, which, you know, they completely get that out of the picture. But so this idea that's coming down, this is, we hear things about the deep state. They like to reverse this idea because on one hand, people who leak information from inside the government, if they have leakers, they don't want them prosecuted. But they do want to prosecute people like Assange. They do want to prosecute people like Snowden. So they use this language about we should be tougher on people like that. And they're, you know, we've been hearing about them preparing charges against Assange. But if you think about it, what Assange has done has exposed and brought transparency to how many different issues? I mean, his impact in the campaign threw the complete corrupt DNC into turmoil. You know, it showed that the media was colluding with the press. That's the kind of information that we need. So
I'd classify him as a whistleblower, just as opposed to a leaker, you know, with malicious intent.
But you will see leakers coming to him. But there are different types of leaks. Like the leaks, this is where I think they get into doublespeak in the deep state. Leaks basically inside the White House, you know, and I talked to Professor Scott about this because I was curious. He's 88 years old. He's been watching the political scene since the 50s. How does this leak business play out through all these different administrations? And one of the things that I found interesting was that he said he never, ever saw CIA leaks against the president, ever, in any of the administrations. So this level of CIA leaks against Trump shows us the deep state's very unhappy that he's in there. Relatively, Trump is an independent. Now, Trump can be coerced, I think, you know, put pressure on. So we don't know how this is all going to work out. But I think, by and large, he's not a natural insider by a long shot. And I think his campaign appealed more to ordinary people. And I think he was more concerned, and he brought up the issues about labor being exported overseas and corporations basically taking over and running working people out of their communities. So these types of themes are anathema to these globalist forces, and the deep state is aligned with that predominantly, most of the deep state, about 80% of it. So that kind of coalescing, I think, around, you know, we need to get this guy out. You have to think of all the different powers that the deep state has. It's press. It's certainly Wall Street. It's certainly military intelligence. They have a lot of power and pressure to bring to bear. But the fact is, when you get right down to it, if they lose at the ballot box, they're in trouble. It's like with Kennedy. You know, they really expected Nixon to win. He looked the best in the polls. But Kennedy had a lot of money, and Trump has a lot of money. And that makes a big difference. And they weren't aware of the long arm of that influence. And then Kennedy gets in, and they try all these different things on him. You know, like they try the Bay of Pigs on him, just like with Trump, they tried Syria on him. And so, you know, after a while, they try to manipulate and maneuver him into position to be a hawk. But he's a real outsider, Trump, in this case, like JFK was. You know, I wouldn't say they have the exact same ideology, but in terms of their archetype, they're certainly independent, and I think that's the kind of thing that the deep state doesn't want to put up with for very long. So we'll see. You know, we're only a few months into the Trump presidency. It's already been a lot of trouble.
Daniel, we have a few minutes left in the interview, and you've done a fantastic job of articulating your points and getting into this information. What are some of the things that we haven't touched on, or anything that we haven't touched on?
You're going to make a connection here. I can't wait to hear this.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're doing a series on the secret space program now at Dark Journalist, and this is very interesting. In a nutshell, the secret space program is where a lot of the U.S. budget, the missing trillions, are disappearing to, and a number of researchers have tracked the missing money going out of the Pentagon into seemingly nowhere. Pentagon right now has $6.5 trillion missing. That is, they can't find it. And that's about a third of U.S. debt, period. So it's a lot of money. It's a really big issue. So the secret space program is basically a lot of research around this idea that most of that money is going into an infrastructure being built in space, and that includes creating industry in space and space ports, space tourism, asteroid mining, and things like that. But as we get deeper and deeper into it, I'm finding, you know, we talked to a lot of insiders about it, but a lot of the insiders are saying there's collusion, there's frustration, there's disinformation around the space. So the people who are involved in that effort around the secret space program don't like that it's a public, in the public domain, being discussed. And so we're getting a lot of weird stories about it, like people coming out and saying, well, I'm part of the secret space program, and, you know, really being zany, and it's supposed to discredit the whole idea. When in fact, trillions of dollars are disappearing there. So that's a key area. You know, if we had deep state spring here for Dark Journalist, it's going to be secret space summer.
Wow. No. $6.5 trillion missing. I have to go back to that just for a second. Where might that be? Where might I find documentation of that dollar amount?
In the work of Catherine Austin Fitz, she's strung it together, but you can actually go and search articles in the Wall Street Journal and Financial Times that will tell you about the missing money at the Pentagon. You know, everyone around this issue of missing money always goes back to Rumsfeld,
right,
on September 10th, and he said there's $2.3 trillion, and everyone thought that was a big deal. Well, $6.5 trillion, that's getting you up to close to $7 trillion. We have $19 trillion in debt, so, you know, if you think about $7 trillion missing, you can run the government for a long time with that kind of money. So where did it go? They can't reconcile that money. They can't reconcile those accounts. And that's where it stands right now. There's no investigation of it. There's reporting around it, but there's no official investigation in Congress.
Interesting. folks, Dark Journalist, we love his work. I personally, I love your interviews, the depth and the scope of your interviews on darkjournalist.com, especially, you know, the Kathy O'Brien interview. I thought that was very interesting.
Wow. What an amazing woman.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And folks, look, go to darkjournalist.com because some of the, you drew out some things that were not in her book and some things your style was really, really great with her. And what was it? The Monarch Project, Project Monarch, as well. Very interesting and very, very good. And all your interviews are great, but, it's fantastic. Got about a minute left. Oh, 30 seconds left. I guess we're out of here. Thank you. I do hope you'll come back and visit with us anytime.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's great to be with you guys. Like I said, I tune in all the time and keep doing such great reporting. It's great to see you.
Thank you so much. And we'll certainly be promoting your channel, your website. God bless you, my friend. Thank you for your bravery, your tenacity, and your truth.
Have a great night, you guys.
Good night,
you
sir.
Too. Thank you.
What a great guy.
Yeah, that was an awesome and very informative hour. And we're going to have another one here with Pastor Langford when we come back from the Voice of Evangelism. Don't go anywhere. Pastor David Langford will be our guest after these short messages. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I watched the O'Brien interview. I mean, that's a fantastic interview.
Well, Kathy,
Sorry.
All clear.
Sorry about that. I guess I didn't realize I was hot there. Sorry.
Yeah, Kathy, having actually, gone before Congress and said that, and I said, why did you even go before Congress to give your whistleblower Tenney a testimony? And she said, I had to for security purposes. So she needed it to be on record or she wouldn't be protected.
Man. Well, you do fantastic work, and I just want to say thank you so much. I really do. I love your website. I love your work, and we'll be promoting everything you do. Appreciate it.
Great. I really appreciate it. It's great to be on.
All right. Talk soon. Thanks, man.
Have a good night over there.
Night.
Take it easy.
All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.